Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, welcome to Books and Rhymes, the podcast that makes you fall in love with reading while flipping the script with a musical twist on your favorite books. I invite guests to pair a book with a song or an album that sparks the same emotional connection. I am your host, Sarah, a West African in the diaspora with a deep abiding love for the written word. Join me on a musical journey through the works of new and classic authors. Thank you for your patience with this week's episode. I would like to express my sincere gratitude to each and every one of you who came out in full force to the live episode recording of Books and Rhymes, the podcast for the launch of Sarah Ladipo Mayinka's novel, Independence, which took place at Falls Bookshop in Charing Cross, London. Also, thank you so much to everyone who came out to the recorded discussion of Panache Chikumatse's essay titled Why I'm No Longer Talking to Nigerians About Race. The recordings of both events will be released on Books and Rhymes, the podcast, in due course. Due to the overwhelming schedule of the past week, the winner of the 2 signed copies of The Old Rift will be announced unveilingly in the next week's episode. Don't forget to sign up to the mailing list at booksandrhymes.com. Today's guest is the absolutely warm and effervescent Oyinka Braithwaite, author of the critically acclaimed debut novel My Sister, the Serial Killer, which was recently shortlisted for the 2019 Women's Prize for Fiction. In the first half of this episode, Oyinka talks about the inspiration for her novel, her reaction to brutally negative reviews, and the peculiarity of Nigerian humour, which underlies the novel My Sister, the Serial Killer. In the second half, Oyinka takes us on a musical journey through several books, including the book she recommends to readers who enjoyed My Sister, the Serial Killer, or those who want to further explore the theme. Tweet your thoughts on this episode using the hashtag Books and Rhymes. Follow at Books and Rhymes on Twitter and Instagram.
Hi, thank you for having me, Sarah.
Thank you so much for being here. So, as previously explained, we're going to be asking Oyinka. I'm going to be engaging in conversation with Oyinka about My Sister, the Serial Killer, and also her reading habit. And so, we're just going to delve into the first question. Okay, so my friend, my dear friend, my very dear friend, Oyinka.
No, because that you just sound like, you know when somebody's about to ask you something and you already know you're gonna want to say no. like that's what is gonna happen. But yeah, go ahead.
So I first heard about My Sister, the Serial Killer when a friend read the blurb out, and ever since then I was like, ooh, 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 ooh. And for the listeners, I'm going to read the blurb out to you. And by the way, please, if you can, just Google this book and just see how positively delicious the cover is. Oh my gosh. When I first heard the book in my hand, I had a physical sensation.
No, I totally get it.
Listen, it's
gorgeous. It really is.
It was quite exciting. And the UK edition of the book, I mean, the cover feels so velvety. It is just delicious. So I'm now going to read the blurb. When Curry Day's dinner is interrupted one night by a distress call from her sister Ayola, she knows what's expected of her. Bleach, rubber gloves, nerves of steel, and a strong stomach. This will be the third boyfriend Ayola's dispatched in self-defense, and the third mess that her lethal little sibling has left Curry Day to clear away. She should probably go to the police for the good of the menfolk of Nigeria, but she loves her sister, and as they say, family always comes first. Until, that is, Ayola starts dating a doctor at the hospital where Korede works as a nurse. Korede's long been in love with him and isn't prepared to see him wind up with a knife in his back. But to save the world would mean sacrificing the other. Oh, my Lord. Hi.
Hey.
Where did this idea come from? And what was the motivation for writing the book?
You know, this is sometimes a tough question, but like, so far, the simplest response that I can think of is, you know, in about 2007, I was researching on the Black Widow spider, and I learned that the Black Widow spider, you know, after she mates with the male, if she happens to be hungry afterwards and the male's still hanging around, she'll eat him. I think she's also the bigger creature. And there was something just so cavalier about that. And I thought it was funny. Like, off the gate, out of the gate, I just thought it was funny. And it stayed with me. Because I think immediately after I read read up about the spider and I sort of ingested it and imbibed it, I wrote a poem called Black Widow Spider. Mm. And, you know, and I guess this idea of a female killing males and having the ability and doing it not out of, like, I don't think the Black Widow spider was hating on the you know, on the male necessarily, but she was hungry and he's there. Because if he wasn't there, she would eat something else. It's not as if she has to eat the male spider, you know. So just this idea of a female doing this to the male in such a cavalier, careless manner was entertaining to me. So I started playing with it little by little, and, you know, a story here or there. Because once I did the poem, then I started playing with it in like a with humans. And eventually in 2017, I started writing this book. And, you know, and I knew that the killer in this book wasn't going to be gloomy or, you know, scary necessarily. She also was going to be doing her crimes in a very cavalier manner.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you said that you were entertained and amused,
yeah,
by the Black Widow's satiation, yeah. you know, just willingness to consume her male partners, which is part of my conflict with this book, but not in a conflict like conflict, but conflict like, oh, conflict, you know.
You're gonna have to explain to us like what the difference is between conflict and conflict. Okay. Like,
do you know how there is some moral conflict, like, oh my gosh, I'm entangled in this mess,
yeah,
and there is a conflict with which, you know, I don't really care, but I should care.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I should be worried that I'm rooting for this serial killer,
yeah,
but I'm really rooting for, yeah, them. You know, was that intentional for you? I mean, why was it important? First of all, why was it important to write this book in a lighthearted manner?
You know, it's weird, but I feel like with age, I'm becoming less willing to stay in dark places. As a young person, I thought the tragic stories were the most romantic things ever, and I loved them. And but like the older I get, it's starting to weigh on me. And it's interesting because, like, my mom, she used to say in the past that as a young person, she used to watch a lot of horror and all of that. And now, like, you find my mom reading, she will read the cheesiest romance, and that's all she reads. That's all she watches Pride and Prejudice every night, the BBC version, I think, every night. Like, we can all quote, you know, Pride and Prejudice.
Wow.
She watches it every night. So she's very just on this light comedy romance, and this is someone who apparently, I find it even hard to believe, but apparently started off with horror. So I don't know if that's what's like happening to me. I hope I don't go all the way on the other end of the scale, but I do kind of find that like I'm less willing to stay somewhere dark, even when I want to engage with darker themes and darker ideas. I don't want to be immersed in darkness. And so, you know, I didn't know at the time it was going to be funny. I didn't even realize it was funny until it got published. but I knew it wasn't going to be immersed in darkness, that there was going to be a lightness to it. Mm-hmm. And it was important for me to keep that lightness, you know, throughout the book. Somewhat.
Do you think the Nigerian sense of humor is reflected in the book?
Some parts. There's some parts that I... there's something one of the characters, one of the nurses, says about... I'm not sure what Corrida is wearing something, so I don't remember. This is like my book. I don't remember what's going on. I think Corrida is wearing something, and one of the nurses says something about how something about it not being original, you know. And that's a phrase that people used to say a lot in Nigeria at some point, where, you know, they'd be like, oh, that watch is nice. It's a shame it's not original, you know. And like, when I had this particular friend, a guy who used to say that stuff to me all the time. And like, the first time he said it to me, I was literally stunned for a second. I was like, what do you mean? It's not, like, what do you mean? And it's so insulting, but it's hilarious at the same time. It's funny. And it's one of those things that, so that I literally just stole from Nigerians. Like, different people were saying it. We went through that phase, and I stole that and put it in the book because I thought it was hilarious. So there are one or two things like that. I think maybe the snideness sometimes with, you know, adults, because I think Nigerians also, we are not rude to our elders, mm-hmm. to their face. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of snideness that goes on around them. And Corrida definitely has that. Yes. And I think that's a very Nigerian thing. So there's some things that are very, very Nigerian about the comedy. Mm. And then there's some things that I just think people find it funny because it's juxtaposing this darkness. And they're like, how can I find this darkness? You know, I don't think that necessarily is Nigerian, but I do think that Nigerians do have a way of finding humor in a situation that wouldn't ordinarily be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how we get by sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, where, and sometimes it's a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing because it means that we don't necessarily always get up quickly enough because we think everything is a joke or something. I don't know. But yeah.
The question I want to ask is, a lot of Black literature, African-American and African literature, they're quite heavy on realism, which can take its toll on readers. Was that, and My Sister the Serial Killer is quite a lighthearted read, but it belies a lot of serious, important themes that the reader is not aware that you're imbibing. But when you take a second thought, the book then takes on a whole new meaning after you've read it.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a conscious choice to make it lighthearted? And what is your take on this, the prevalence of, you know, heaviness in Black literature?
Okay, I'm going to attack this in parts because it's a lot. Okay, first of all, I think so. I want to talk about it as a writer, but I also want to talk about it as an individual, and I'll address it as an individual first. The truth is that a lot of these books that are that have a lot of culture and a lot of you know, very serious themes and are very heavy and they've got a lot of history in it. The author has that knowledge. I don't. Like, let's just start from there. I don't know a lot about the history of Nigeria necessarily. History, I don't even think is really something that we're taught in Nigeria, but I was in primary school in England. So if they were, like, I wasn't there for it. You know, in terms of politics, I'm not engaged with politics in the way that, you know, a lot of Nigerian writers are, or maybe African writers. I can't write what I don't know. And I don't have the interest to necessarily write about those things. So I write about what engages me. And I've always been, as opposed to, like, I'm interested in community. And I'm, you know, I think I'm trying to work on that a little bit more. But I'm also interested in individuals. I'm interested in what makes a person tick. How far will a person go, especially when they're cornered? Where do our desires take us? Those are the things I'm interested in smaller settings, right? So I'm not interested necessarily in the big picture. Mm. And I think sometimes you can achieve the big picture just by looking at a small part of it, you know. So you don't need to cover the entire continent, the entire country, or entire city to get an idea of what the culture is like. Mm. So that's just me, like, where my interests lie. As a writer, I don't go in necessarily to a book thinking of themes. but I already know the things that I have, you know, as an individual, you know, you have your prejudices, you have, you know, you have the things you believe, you have so many things that you're learning day by day, and they're inside you. You don't have to do very much. They will come out, you know, in your art and whatever it is that you're doing. As a writer, as a reader, I don't like to read a book and immediately be like, oh, okay, this is what the theme is. Like, you know, she's trying to teach me something, or he's trying to teach me something, or they're leading me somewhere. I don't really like that feeling. You know, it's like going to school, and I don't, I'm not a huge fan of that. I've been out of school and I'm done with it. So I think because I was conscious of that as a reader, as a writer, I'm also conscious of it where I'm like, if I am going to pass across a message, and oftentimes I like for the reader to decide for themselves. I'll just present you the scenario and you decide what you want to think about it. But even if I do want to lead you there, that's not going to be what's going to drive my writing or drive the book. It's the character that's going to drive the book, as far as, you know, I'm concerned, or the circumstances that the character finds him or herself in.
See, some writers, like Toni Morrison specifically, her approach to writing, well, when she's asked about her writing process for her books, she says that the characters reveal to her what they write themselves, basically. And she can't move forward unless she's obeying the voice of the character. What is your writing process?
No, because I was thinking,
not like Toni Morrison.
I was thinking about what I've written besides this. I think for this book was very character driven. You know, I didn't know where it was going to end when I started. So, you know, as I learned about Corey Day and her relationship with Ayola and her love for Ayola, the ending became clear to me. Like, it revealed itself. Because at the start, like, a lot of when I was on this app Pigeonhole, and they had the book in what they call staves, and people were reading and commenting on it sort of like in a book club style, real time kind of. So I got to read towards the end, I got to read the comments and stuff, and you know, some of the thought processes of the readers were mine as well. Like, I was wondering, okay, who's gonna die next, what's gonna happen, what's, like, I wasn't necessarily sure, but the ending revealed itself to me when I realized how much Corey Day loved her sister, and it became clear. But I didn't know that at the start. I didn't know that's where it was going to go. So for this book, definitely, Corey Day and Ayola. And Ayola, writing Ayola, every time I had to, like, put the quotation, the speech marks, and it was Ayola's turn to talk, I was just, like, excited. Like, what's she going to say now? Like, what is she going to... Ayola
is a mad one.
Yeah. Like, I had a lot of fun, like, you know, and I didn't pre-plan those things. Like, I just went for it, and Ayola would tell me, like, you know, I'm going to say this now, I'm going to do this really weird thing now. And I'm like, okay, fine.
Okay, now this is where I'm going to ask you for the juice. Give me the goss. Who does Ayola remind you of?
Ooh.
Oh.
It's a tough one. I don't...
No. Boo.
Boo. No, she's going to... I think there's a little bit of me in her. I think there's a little bit of, you know, because I watch a lot of anime, so I think there's a little bit of that kind of crazy that I've experienced in anime inside Ayola. You know, I think she's just like a combination of different things. There's a little bit, you know, because when I was going into her, I thought of her, I mean, she's an adult, but I treated her as a child, and I loved her as a child, and there's something very childlike about her. So I didn't, and I think, you know, that's the thing about me, though. Like, even when I'm naming my characters, I can't really name them after someone that I'm close to or who's very strong in my mind, because that's going to affect the freedom that I have. So, you know, I don't like to be reminded of the people around me, because then it's hard to kill them, or it's hard to, like, no, it becomes difficult to do some things that you need to be able to do. You need distance. So for the most part, I actually don't like to tailor my characters after people that I can readily identify.
What has been the most interesting review you've read about the book, or you've heard about the book.
Interesting or hurtful? Some people have hurt me.
See, interesting could be a euphemism. Yeah. So yes, I like to think hurtful. Yes, what is the hurtful?
You know, for the most part, when people have given the feedback and it's been negative, like sometimes I can see what they're saying, like I'm like, oh, okay, fair enough. Sometimes it's just not for them, it's not the kind of book for them. There is one girl on YouTube though that slaughtered it. Like she slaughtered it 6 ways till Sunday. Like it was tough. I watched the entire thing and afterwards I was like, okay, I think I may have called her a gremlin. Oh. Like, I was like, where did this gremlin come from? So what? I'm sorry if she comes across. I'm really sorry. You know, I was just emotional at the time.
Did you comment on the
YouTube? No, I didn't comment. Okay. I didn't comment. This is the first time she'll hear. If she even know, I don't know. Maybe there's more than one like YouTube video now slaughtering it. But at the time, she was the only one I had come across. And it was tough because she didn't have a single... Like for her, the book had no redeeming quality. Like she hated it, right? Mm. And felt that it just completely missed its mark. And that's tough as someone who's created something to listen to someone be like, yep, nope, whatever this book was trying to do, it did not do it. It missed it by a mile. And it's tough, but you have to sort of... I mean, one thing I know is that I've written the book. It's out of my hands now. And that's something I have to be at peace with. I can't change anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't be like, oh, wait. Like, no, this doesn't really make sense. Let me change it. I can't do that. It's out now. And whatever happens, happens. And I need to be at peace with that. Also, reasonably, not everybody's going to love the book. And, you know, and it's... and I'm just grateful it's gotten the attention that it's gotten. So, yeah, you just have to grow up.
I'm curious. What was her criticism? What was like the main bulk of her criticism?
Do you know what? I'm going to have to watch it again because she did reference some books that she felt did a better job of doing what I was trying to do.
Were they by Nigerian or African authors as well?
Not that I know of. I don't think they were. I'm pretty sure they weren't. But, you know, she clearly picked it up because of the attention that it was getting and, you know, the hype, and she just felt like it hadn't met the hype and she felt it was weak. I guess she felt it was really weak, like it didn't achieve anything as far as she was concerned. So it was tough. It was the meanest like review I'd come across. And not mean, because I know her intention wasn't to be mean, but like it was the first time that, you know, they hadn't even said, oh, okay, but her writing's cute, or like, you know, whatever. Like,
there was no redeeming qualities.
There was no, like, as far as she's concerned, like, she doesn't even know why they picked up the book. Like, so, yeah, but like I said, you have to grow up in the process because you realize that, because the truth is, not everybody's going to like the book. That's just facts. And there's not much you can do about it. And you just kind of hope that it will reach whoever it's supposed to reach, and it's so nice when people really enjoy it and say that they laughed and stuff. It's nice to know that some people are it's making people feel lighter or just to have fun in a way that they didn't think they would have. And I wasn't expecting to have that, so in the same way that I didn't expect all this positive energy, there's going to be negative energy that I also didn't expect, and I have to be okay with both.
Do you think that culture am I starting my question with do you? But I'm going to continue. In thinking of this review, I have an assumption in my mind, but I'm just going to keep it to myself. Is it important, or how important do you think it is for a reader to understand the cultural context of a book in order to get it? Is that important or...
A book or this book?
This book.
I don't think it's important for this book. Because, you know, I mean, there are a lot of cultural things in it. Like, you know, for example, the phrase where there's a part where the mother says something in Yoruba, and it's like 4 sentences in Yoruba. And it's not translated, right? But because of the way that the scene is set up, I feel like any woman will kind of know. You won't know what she's saying, but you know. You know, it's like a heart-to-heart communication. It's a human thing, right? Where you know just by sort of the pain and everything, you understand. Like, you know, it's just like watching someone on her knees crying out in a foreign language. Like, she doesn't need to, like, translate that. You get it. So I don't think that you need to fully grasp the culture. And as a reader, you know, like we're, I guess in the literary world, we're considered, black females are considered a minority, I suppose, in the literary world. And as a reader reading mostly white literature, I haven't felt like I needed to be, I mean, I guess I'm comfortable with the British, but like America, I don't feel like I need to be immersed in their culture or any other cultures that I've read to get it, like Indian books. Like, I don't feel like I need to, you know, because it's a human thing. Like, a lot of things that we go through, it's human as opposed to just rooted in our cultural practices or our traditions. And even if they are, again, at the heart of it, you know, whenever somebody's struggling against something, it's a human struggle. So, I don't think.
But I think that...
You're like, that's not the answer I was looking for.
Well, you can see my face. I'm like, to me, my sister, the serial killer, it's a delicious taste of Nigeria. When I know you shouldn't, you know, use delicious with murder, but you know, but I felt transported to Lagos when reading the book. The language was so authentic, and I'm pleased you mentioned the non-translated Yoruba phrase. To me, that's an important thing, because you're saying this is how I interpret. This book is for the cultural insiders. You get it. And if you understand the language, it adds a greater depth to your reading. If you don't understand the language, it makes you understand that you're an outsider, but you realize that this is a separate culture that I'm not a part of. Do you see what I mean? So the reason why I asked that question is, number one, because of that absence of the dominance of Africans telling their stories to the West. And also, there might be some phraseologies and expressions in this book that will be lost to outside readers. So the one I'm going to mention, the scene that I'm going to mention, is the one where the father has a girlfriend. And you describe her as yellow. Which in Nigeria, that's not a pejorative term. That's, you know, it's sometimes a compliment, which is quite weird. You know, to us, it's a compliment. But African-Americans, or rather West people in the diaspora, given the politics of race and culture in the diaspora, that is pejorative, because it triggers that colorism. Debate.
Thing is, I agree with you, but I stand by, like, because the thing is, first of all, the Yoruba phrase, right, that phrase doesn't even just alienate non-Africans. It alienates
even Nigerians who are not Yoruba.
Yes, do you understand? So, you know, so which was not my intention. It's just that you can't apologize for, you know, who you are, where you're from, right, or your language. So you need to just go with it. However, again, I didn't think of it as alienation. If anything, I thought of it as an introduction, because, you know, the thing about it that I find challenging, like, and as a, you know, I know you would understand this, is this whole, I mean, it's been talked about, but this whole Africa is not a country thing, right? But even outside of that, like, I find a lot of Nigerians or Africans are the ones encouraging this idea, you know, and, you know, sometimes people are surprised that we speak English in Nigeria. And I'm like, that's because we don't all speak the same language. We need to communicate with each other. So you said that a lot of people don't know a lot of things about Nigeria, and this is just one way for them to start to understand that, okay, this is one language, but this girl says she's Igbo. She doesn't understand what this means, you know, or whatever. So I see more of as an introduction, because maybe we're not doing enough of that. I don't know. But as an introduction to a culture, like, welcome to Nigeria, as opposed to an alienation from, for starters. Secondly, like I said, phrases, yeah, you'll miss here and there, as I do sometimes when I'm reading things, right? But what is the true thing about, what is this book essentially about? It's about relationship, and you can understand that wherever you're from. Talking about this yellow thing, you know, I did come across a reviewer who, you know, the character in the book that's referred to as yellow, the reviewer felt that it was an Asian individual, which I, for a minute, I was just stunned. Like, I was like, where? And then when I looked at it, I was like, oh, okay, you know, I get it. Because I was writing as a Nigerian, and I wasn't thinking about necessarily, oh, will a non-Nigerian get this? You know, and it's funny because once I was writing, I don't know if it was this book I was writing, but I was writing something, and my brother was, no, it wasn't this book. He was much younger, and he came into my room and he was like, is this going to appeal to a foreign audience? And it was just so funny because I think at the time he was probably like 13, and I was like, get out of here, get out of my room. What do you mean is it going to appeal to a foreign audience? And so it's this kind of mentality where you want to shape yourself so other people, but thankfully I had fantastic editors who, even though they weren't African, and they weren't black, kind of encouraged me to just be myself, to just go with it. I mean, the book was half, you know, mostly done, but you know, in terms of editing, they could have asked me to like hold back or no, we don't get it, or there was nothing like that. It was actually because one of them, James, encouraged me with this, because in the first draft, that Yoruba sentence that's not translated wasn't even in it in the first draft. But at some point, he sent me this article about, basically about what we're talking about embracing your culture, not shying away from it in your literature, in your writing or whatever. And I came up, so, you know, I was working on that scene and the sentence kind of came to me, what I wanted the sentence to say, which I'm not even sure, like, I struggled a bit with the Yoruba. but like, I knew what I wanted it to say. And you know, when I put it there, I was like, is this okay? Like, is it okay that I've left it like this? And they were like, it's fine. So, you know, I know some people have had an issue with the fact that it's not translated. Some people have had an issue with it, but they'll be fine. They'll be okay in the end.
I'm a huge proponent of, of writing for, of people reading and see themselves reflected in the text. And there is a very affirming thing of saying, it's very subconscious, you know, that, this is written for me. You know, one of my bugbears is when you're reading works that are by people who are not from America or Britain or from English-speaking languages, from English-speaking countries. You know, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. England and America.
Yeah. You know? Okay. Now that we've narrowed it down. <You know?
laughs> And when they use terms that are specific to their culture, they always italicize it.
Okay, yeah.
That gets me.
Oh, really?
Because I feel like you're othering yourself in the work.
You're like, you're doing it to yourself.
Yes! Why do you have to italicize akara? Eating food.
Yeah.
Akara, why are you italicizing this? I know it's food. Yeah. I can go and Google or just all time in.
Yeah.
You know, I digress because it's... So thank you. Thank you. And I want to clarify one thing. I mean, yes, I think, yes, it's one thing to say alienation, but I don't see that alienation in terms of people seeing themselves as alienated in the text. And if you do... I think that's a sense of entitlement. If you feel alienated from the text, then you're entitled.
Yeah, because I don't. Like, when I read a culture that's not my own, like, wherever it is, a French book, but I actually don't feel like it's... I mean, if it's in French, I do, because then I can't read French. If it's in English, like, and it's a different culture, I engage with it. It's a different environment. It's refreshing. Yes. You know, I don't feel it. So, you know, they shouldn't either.
Deal. We've had to read your Jane Austen, so deal. How would you pitch your book to someone who's like ambivalent about reading it?
Okay, first of all, it's not gory, because that seems to be a lot of people's concern. It is not gory. If you're worried about that, that's not what it is. It's more about relationship than it is about murder, even though it says it on the cover. But you know, you don't get a lot of stabby, so if that's also what you're looking for, this might not be the one for you. And yeah, I think if you're in a family, read it. If you've got a sister, you definitely have to read it. You know, so if you've got a brother, a sister,
if you've got a boyfriend, if you've got a crush, if you've got a colleague.
Yeah, if you've got a colleague, yes. If you're a doctor or a nurse, yes, pick it up, you know.
If you're a pedestrian, yeah. If you know someone in a coma.
Yeah, definitely. If you don't like cops, yes, pick it. The book up.
If you know a divorcee, read it.
If you're Nigerian, pick it up. If you're African, pick it up.
African American.
Yeah, if you're black, pick it up. If you want to know about the crazy that goes on in the minds of Nigerians, you definitely pick it up. If you've come across a Nigerian in uni and you're wondering why they are the way they are, pick up this book. You'll figure it out.
It's wonderful. Okay, so we're now going into the books and rhyme segment of the podcast.
Excited about this.
Books and Rhymes is an informative, effervescent podcast where we explore the intersection of literature and music. We engage guests in an informal discussion, well, sometimes formal, discussion about the books they have chosen. We unpack, you know, we discuss the themes in the book, and we also draw connection between the guests, how they see these books, and in a way we're drawing connections between their memory, the time of reading the book, and, you know, why the books mean so much to them or so less to them. And then I might have some questions about the books that they've picked. If I don't like it, I might flame them. So yes, there's one book that I'm like, why is it there?
Okay.
So we have four categories. You know, your favorite book. The second one is the book that's had the most impact on you. And then I ask you for the book, your go-to book that gets you out of your reading slump. And then the book you recommend to readers who loved My Sister, the Serial Killer. So the first category is, what is your favorite book? And which is the song that you pair it with?
Okay, so my favorite book is Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. And this one was tough because I had to, like, obviously I've not thought of these categories. I've not thought of them before. So I had to sort of do some real research. And Jane Eyre was tough because obviously it's a different era. And to find a song to pair it with was crazy. So eventually I settled on I'll Still Have Me by Cynthia Nabumi. Maybe in another life, everything worked out all right. And things that made this harder passed us by. But there's no bad dream to wake up from. No, I got it bad when it's the morning ninja. Oh, that's on my mind. If I don't have you, at least I still have me. It's a really sweet sounding song, and I chose it because one of the scenes in Jane Eyre that kind of really stayed in my memory, I mean, there's so many scenes, but one of them was when she's, sorry guys, there's going to be a spoiler, but if you haven't read Jane Eyre by now, like, I don't know if I can help you.
My mouth is... Again.
Yeah, her mouth dropped open. But I mean, it's called a classic for a reason.
Can you curve the spoiler? Just be vague.
No, okay, I'll try and be vague. But I mean, guys, it's called a spoiler for a reason. I mean, it's called a spoiler. It's called a classic for a reason. But okay, so there's this really intense scene between Jane Eyre and Mr. Rochester. And, you know, she has to make a choice. And this song...
What was the scene? That's not...
Okay. I mean, you said be vague.
But I've read the book. Is it towards the end or is it the middle?
It's the middle. It's the
Give
scene.
Give an idea of the...
It's like after the wedding scene.
Her wedding with... Oh!
Yeah, that scene where they're alone in the room.
Does a person come? Is it when she meets the person?
No, it's after that. When it's just her, when she's trying to, when he's begging her. We're talking around. The reader's going to be like, what? Why was he begging her?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it, so basically, Jane Eyre and Mr. So Jane Eyre Give a synopsis of the book.
Okay, Leah, let me do that. Let's start with that.
Yeah, okay, so I'm just like going in.
Jane Eyre is a tough book to give a synopsis about because it's so, like, it's because it starts when she's like 10,
yeah,
and you know, it ends when she's I think maybe 22 or something, yeah. And so it's a, you know, it's, we've got 12 years that we're covering in that time, but she had a really, you know, she's an orphan living, mm, at the start she's an orphan with living with her aunt and her cousins, and mm, they're just really, it's a very Cinderella type of situation, yeah. I mean, she's not cleaning up after them, but they don't treat her very well. Eventually they send her off to this horrible, they can afford to do better, but yes, they send her off to this horrible boarding school where, mm, a lot of the girls there die. It's just very dark. Now that you think about it, like, just think of it, because I'm always like, oh, I don't know why people think Jane Eyre is dark, but like talking about it, and I'm like, hang on a minute. Like, all these young girls were, so she goes to this, I feel so bad now. So she she leaves, eventually she's not one of the girls who dies in the boarding school. She leaves to become a governess in, you know, this guy's rich house, looking after his ward. And you know, so it's about him, and they fall in love, I guess it's safe to say. But it, things don't go, it's not your things don't really go according to plan.
There are so many plot points, yes, in this book.
Yeah, a lot of twists and, yes, turns before you get to the end. I think a lot of people kind of think of Jane Eyre as a weak character, but I never did. As a child, I never did. And as an adult, I still don't. I think she had immense strength. And I feel like the choice she made then was a choice that many women today will still not make. Like, if you had, I mean, if we think of 50 Shades of Grey, if you have this guy, like, Mr. Rochester was basically like an older, yes, Christian, you know,
Grey.
And he, if you had a guy who could give you everything you wanted, was willing to give you everything you wanted, you came from obscurity, yeah, you didn't have money, nothing, he's willing to give you everything, and without that weird contract that Christian or Grey gives, like, without all of that, you know, and loves you to bits, treats you better than you've ever been treated in your life, because bear in mind, guys, she came from a really dark place, you know, and is begging her, like, he was full on weeping, begging her to stay, and she says no. The song I picked for this section where she decides to go and she's, you know, alone and penniless, and it's called I'll Still Have Me. It says, maybe in another life everything worked out all right and things that made this harder passed us by, but there's no bad dream to wake up from. No, I got it bad when it's the morning and you're all that's on my mind. If I don't have you, at least I'll still have me. Mm. So I thought that kind of coined that whole, you know, what she was going through. Because at the end of the day, she realized that, again, this is why I don't understand why people think she was weak. Because her whole thing in that section is that I'm important. She actually kind of, like, I wish we had the book to look at now. She actually kind of is like, I'm important. I value myself. Because I think it's this thing where it's like you have, she has this internal monologue when she's talking to herself and herself is telling her that, you know, you're nothing, you had nothing, this guy will give you everything, and she's like, no, I have me, I'm important, I'm valuable.
Whilst you're things, finding the page, how many times have you read this book?
Yeah. I mean, like, the first time I was like 10, so we've had time to, sometimes I don't read the entire book, I'll go to like the parts that okay, so now she's talking to him. Like, let me just get to the, it won't be long now.
She's live reading the book.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at it. Because right now, Mr. Rochester is telling her his life story to try and get her to be like, you know,
I love you, I'm going to stay, like, there's with this, you.
She says, he says, you are going, Jane? I am going, sir. She called him sir because, you know, she used to work for him. Guys, also, this was a long time ago. Don't judge me. You are leaving me? Yes. Anyway, so she leaves. He still is like asleep on it. Okay. Here, I found it. Oh, brilliant. I'm good.
Check you out.
Okay, so she says, oh, comply, it said. Think of his misery. Think of his danger. Look at his state when left alone. Remember his headlong nature. Consider the recklessness following on despair. Soothe him. Save him. Love him. Tell him you love him and will be his. Who in the world cares for you? Or who will be injured by what you do? Still, indomitable was the reply, I care for myself. The more solitary, the more friendless, the more unsustained I am, the more I will respect myself. And she, you know, she goes on in that vein.
Mm. Do you know the thing? This song is so it's hauntingly gorgeous.
Yeah.
And Jane Eyre also has a haunting air. Well, yeah. There's explicit haunting in the book. But it's a gothic novel, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the song has that gothic feel to it. You know, and please listen to I Still Have Me by Cynthia Bosny. And we're going to have a playlist for this episode. Well, the playlist already exists anyways. So it's going to be on the website booksandrhymes.com and it's going to be on the show note for this episode. And you have to listen to the song. My gripe with Jane Eyre.
Okay, well, we're going to get that. Yeah. What is it?
Listen, I read this book. I was introduced to this book in a literature class.
Okay.
If you then look at Bertha Mason through Mr. Rochester's first wife, through today's lens, you can say she's black.
You say you can say that. Like okay, I want to see where you're going with this. Okay. I'm here for it.
So for me, for me, is that duality in Jane Eyre, where Bertha Mason, she was depicted as an animal.
Yeah.
She was depicted as an animal. The first time it comes into your consciousness, it's like this guttural noise.
Yeah.
It's demonic, the phrase demonic, and you know, she's red and Jane Eyre, even the motifs.
Yeah.
It's red, danger.
Are you talking about the films here?
No, in the book.
In the book, okay.
It's written.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And Bertha Mason and Jane Eyre is white.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So you have that angel demon juxtaposition between the two of them.
Yeah.
And for me, the main criticism of Jane Eyre is that it to me is the early example of the tension in feminism and the portrayal of black women in literature.
Well, you know, okay, hang on a second.
And also how Bertha Mason, she was sacrificed on the altar. Of Jane Eyre's piety.
Yeah.
Because if Bertha Mason had not appeared, Jane Eyre would not have had her strength of her resolution. She would not have left the house. So it's almost like the black woman is demonized so that the white woman's purity is amplified.
No, the thing about Jane Eyre, though, you also need to consider is that it's very, very, it's a fictional novel, but it's very close to what Charlotte Bronte's life actually was. So, I mean, I don't think she had a Mr. Rochester or anything like that, but it's very close to what her life actually was. Now, I don't think that her concern, considering the things she went through, because Charlotte Bronte went through a lot as well as a woman and all of that. I don't think her concerns at that time, I don't get the impression, and what I've read about her, I don't think she was involved in that side of things, or that she even really had a lot of interaction with people of other races. Like I think she had a very isolated life, and you know, she lost a lot of her siblings very early. She died early. So I'm not sure that was necessarily something that was, you know, she'd had a very sheltered existence. So I don't know but then again, it's very likely, because like you said, it was a different time. So racism wouldn't even have been seen as racism then.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
How was your imagination of England from reading Jane Eyre versus your real lived experience?
Well, you know, when I read Jane Eyre, I was living in England. So, because I did my primary school in England. So I was more in England growing up. I was more here as a child than I was in Nigeria. So, and obviously I didn't have that experience of like reading about Nigeria and then going to Nigeria and be like, what is this? So I didn't have that, because like this was where I kind of grew like up. Most of my memories of as a child are here. So I didn't. So I already knew what England was like, and I knew that I was reading stuff that happened a long time ago.
Yeah, unlike me, I was bamboozled.
Yeah. I can see how, like, you know, I don't know if you ever read it, Mallory Towers. No. You know, I remember back, I think we had moved back to Nigeria already, and my sister had read Mallory Towers, my youngest sister, and she was about to start boarding school in Nigeria, and she was so excited. And like at some point, I was like, you know, it's not going to be, you know, right? Like, I hope you know that you're not going to get a Mallory Towers experience. And I don't think she knew, like, even with the warning, like, it was a slap. We had to take her out of that school. Yeah, she was not.
Yeah. Okay. That reminds me of a graphic novel called German Calendar No December by Sylvia Ofili. It's a graphic novel. It's about a mixed race girl who, her mother is German, her father is Nigerian, and she lived in Nigeria. And she went to boarding school, but she'd always been reading, you know, she was always been reading Enid Blyton and all of this. So she thought boarding school was going to be like that. And it was a culture shock. And then she then migrated to Germany. That was a different experience for her as well.
I was in boarding school in Nigeria for a year, and
say no more. So the second category is the book that has had the most impact on you.
So
what is the title of the book? The song
The Voice in the Wind by Francine Rivers. And the song I chose for that was Silla by Emily Sun.
Your only begotten, the sun and the moon and the stars all been watching Silla. They've been watching Silla.
So I'm trying to figure out how to summarize this. Sarah's giving me I'm learning my homes from you. I was like, this one is heavy. Oh gosh, I don't know how to. So it's about a girl. It's set in. I want to say biblical it's times, but it's not.
It's set in AD 69 to 70.
Yeah, so after Christ.
Yes.
So it's a long time ago. Yes. It's about a Jewish girl.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name? Hadassah?
Yes, Hadassah.
Like, I'm trying to remember. Hadassah. Okay, her name was Hadassah. And so she gets taken from her family. So they've taken her, and she's enslaved in this Roman home. And you know, it's the lions in the what do they used to call those things?
The gladiator.
Yeah, the gladiator thing. It has
Colosseum. Is it Colosseum? There you go.
You know, you've got that. You've got this whole. I mean, she's such a beautiful character. Basically, she's a Jew, she's a Christian, I guess, actually, because it's after Christ, she's a Christian, and she, you know, she lives in this. She's living with this Roman family who are basically all non-Christians, I guess, and they're rich family, she deals mostly with the son and the daughter. The daughter is close to her age, they might be the same age, and they strike up a friendship, but then things kind of change later on. The brother, he eventually does love her, comes to love her, and I think eventually comes to share her faith. But it's, you know, it sounds much simpler than I'm describing it. It's like an epic fantasy. If like, that's the closest thing I compare it to.
It's a trilogy.
Yeah, and it's a trilogy, yes. So A Voice in the Wind is just the first in the trilogy. I've read all three. They're fantastic. you know, it's exactly like that, because it's a trilogy. It has that epic fantasy thing going on. There's so much, there's love, there's action, and everything. And then there's a strong Christian theme running through. And it's not like just a little like tidbits. It's a Christian novel. But one of the reasons why it impacted me the most is it's the only book I think I've ever read where after I was done with the book, I put the book down. I went to the corner of my room. I can never forget this. Sank in a very dramatic manner because I was a teenager. Sank to the ground with my back against the wall and wept. Oh. I cried and I cried and I cried. Like, it was like, so like, I don't know. When you said the book that impacted me the most, this was the one I could think of, because I don't think I've ever experienced that with any other book where I was just weeping.
Why?
Because of the ending.
Oh, was it a cliffhanger ending?
Well, at the no. I wouldn't say it was a cliffhanger, but it wasn't. It was a really tragic ending. You know, thankfully, you know, in book two, you're able to gather your heart back in pieces, sort of put things together again. But yeah, so I don't know. Francie Rivers is a genius. I don't know.
So why pair it with Sela by Emily Sande?
Because, okay, first of all, the word Sela has biblical... I try to find out what it means. It like it really doesn't have like a specific meaning. I think some people liken it to peace, you know. And then the sound, because again, it was weird finding a song for this because it's not a contemporary book. So to find something that did justice to the tone of the novel, so it's not necessarily dark, but it's. It's deep.
It's quite ethereal. Yeah, it's sort of deep, heavenly body.
And your heart is in your mouth a lot. Ooh. Because we're talking about times when, I know, you know, times when Christians were being killed. Because this is when the book is based on the time when Christians were being killed a lot. And Hadassah, the main character, she's already been through a lot. She's lost her entire family. And despite that, she manages to be strong. And especially surrounded by people who don't share her faith, who don't believe the things she believes. She manages to be strong. She's a slave, you know, lost everything she's ever known. Is in an environment that is hostile to her and her faith. And I know people are still going through that today in, you know, in different faiths and stuff. It's tough. You know, that's the environment that this book is set in. So you're constantly in fear for this girl's life. But she manages to be victorious and not in a, like a cheesy kind of way. She's victorious from deep inside. Like she's victorious from like her belly. So it's really... deep. So this song, I think I liked it partly because it was hard for me to put a finger on it in terms of what it was really about. It seemed to be about so much all at once, and it was beautiful. I mean, Emily Sand, you know, at some point I was tempted to put her name on like every like all the songs were gonna be Emily Sand songs. Like you can almost not go wrong with her. I don't know.
I love
so
that.
Yeah, I'll just read a little bit of the song, maybe give you an idea as to why I picked it. So I'll start from here. But I'm deep in my womb and I'm kicking on the diaphragm. Try not seizure, blades like Caesar. Funny when I feel the choke of the umbilical, my soul gets deeper, songs real spiritual. Cross around my neck and a crystal in my pocket. My love is the bomb and forgiveness is the rocket. Which army gonna stop it? My faith rises up. Even while pulse dropping, I wrote it on my heart so it's never forgotten. It's a little bit less rappy than it sounded when I was saying it, but it's a short song, guys. Listen to it. It's gorgeous. You guys, I hope you love it. It's great.
Yes. Okay, so I did a bit of digging, and I found that when Francine Rivers was asked about what inspired her to write this trilogy, this is what she said, and I quote, "Almost every short story I've written since becoming a Christian has come from a question relating to a struggle in my own faith walk. with A Voice in the Wind, the question was, how do you live out your faith amongst family members and friends who are not at all interested in the gospel? I became fascinated by the early martyrs and how they had encouraged and how they had the courage to die for their faith. So I decided to begin the story in AD 69 to 70 with the chaos and destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. Through the character of Hadassah, the answer came. It is not what you say, it is how you live that has an impact.
Mm.
Also, you don't need courage ahead of time. God prepares you and supplies you with the courage you need to face difficulties when you need it. What is your response to this?
I don't know how I can respond to that. Like, I feel like Francine Rivers, like, I mean, she's my Oga in this, like, so Oga, like, how do you come? Yeah. It means like she's the person that I, you know, she's not my level, basically. So when you say, how do I respond? It's a bit tough.
No, when I said, does it resonate with you?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, one thing I've realized going into it, like, I know this might sound a bit weird, but when the book got picked up,
which book?
This one, My Sister, the Serial Killer. When it got picked up and I knew it was going to be published and I knew when it was going to be published, and, you know, the publishers kind of gave me a heads up as to how much attention they thought it was going to get and things like that. And as time went, I started to see the kind of attention. And something that struck me was that, you know what? You're going to have to become rooted in your faith. Like, if you're not rooted already, you need to do the work now, between now and when the book comes out, because that's when, because I live a very sort of insular life. You know, I'm usually just in my room. I have a small ensemble of friends, like very small, you know, people that I see here and there. And, you know, I don't have on social media, I'm there, but I'm not really, you know, I'm not very active, you know, I'm not really doing anything that interesting. So this was going to be my first time really interacting with the world at large. And I knew that's when things can get a bit hinky, you know, where you're going to start to question yourself a lot. You're going to get confused about things. You know, people are going to respond to you in a certain way. And I knew that I needed to be prepared for that period of my life. And I felt like the best way to be prepared was to spend more time in the Word. Just because otherwise you just find yourself being pulled, you know, this way and that. And I didn't want that. So I definitely, but you know, the thing is that there's some things you can prepare for and then there's some things that completely take you by surprise. Mm-hmm. And like she said, then you have to trust yourself and you have to trust what you know and believe that God is there for you and that he will intervene or speak on your behalf. But it definitely, I think another thing that I've learned in this period is I've learned a lot about love in that, like, because I think in the period that we are in as people right now, we're all very opinionated. We all have our beliefs and our faiths and the things that we stand for and our principles. And most of the time they're clashing with each other. We're all clashing. And it's to be able to be in the space and know that it's okay if you completely disagree with me and everything I have said, we can still walk away from this friends. We can still walk out of this room and be friends. We can still love each other, even though our beliefs, because at the end, because to be honest, God didn't call me to fight. Like, that's not what he called me to do. So I'm not gaining anything for him. I'm not gaining anything for myself. That's not a space I want to operate in. So it's okay if your ideas are completely different to mine. And truth is that this is one of the reasons why Twitter actually scares me. No, I don't know if I'm the only one.
You're not
I'm
alone.
Sure I'm not. Twitter not alone. Scares me so badly. I think it's a really hostile environment. And I'm like, and that's the thing about arguments. I learned when I was much younger where at some point, because I used to be one of these really, like, I don't know when your blood gets hot, like in an argument, like your blood is like boiling. And eventually I realized, well, there's two things. One, somebody once said that God doesn't need you to fight for him. He's God, right? That's one. The second thing though, and this is about like generally any kind of argument, is that I realized that all those arguments, we all used to leave the room with the same opinions we entered with. So all that shouting you're doing or getting like worked up, you're not changing the other person's mind. You really, so like, for instance, it's not about what you say at the end of the day, it's how you live. If you're living a particular way, somebody's going to ask you, what about you is different? Why, you know, how come you're so happy? Or how come you're managing, you know, how come you're managing this so well? People, you know, and Nigerians like to talk. That's one thing about Nigerians are talkers. So we can have this argument from morning to night and we still leave with the exact same, you know. So I don't believe in argument, people. I don't believe in hate. All this hate, I don't know what it's called, like hate speech that's going on, and, you know, the way people are dragging people. I don't really see what the point is.
And that takes us on, that's a very food for thought. Yeah, that's why Instagram is my favorite place to operate.
I like Instagram. It's just lovely. Like, people don't talk too much on Instagram, you know, and then you rarely get people, like, I don't know why, people don't really drag people on Instagram. No. Like, you rarely see that, but Twitter is a war zone.
I think, to me, Twitter is you're talking to the world. Instagram, you're talking to a selected group of people.
Yeah, people who have your interests.
They have to follow you to see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's true.
And you don't just swerve into someone's lane for the sake of it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's more curated friendship. And if and for someone like me who uses Instagram for a specific reason, we discuss books.
Yeah.
And we're having discussions.
I'm so glad you've explained
books.
It, because I've been trying to like figure out what the difference between Twitter and Instagram is, because Twitter is tough.
Mad.
Twitter is tough.
Mad. People go to Twitter to take you down.
Yeah, like that's what. Like, I feel like some people wake up in the morning. Like, do you know the Twitter account, the sub delivery man or something?
No.
Like, who apparently his main, whoever that is, like, he's behind.
Is he a professional troll?
Huh?
Is he a professional troll?
Yeah, like, what he does apparently is like, so say I say something about you, like, I'm like, oh, there's this girl who owns this podcast about books and music, and we all know it's full of like, it's just rubbish, right? But I didn't name
it's
you.
It's not true.
And I did. So I don't name you. I don't name your podcast. His work is to tag you. Like, somehow, like, let you know that this... So you see something you wouldn't ordinarily have seen.
So you subtweet me and he makes sure I yes, find out.
Yeah.
He's a jobless
goat. That's his job. Setting off wars. Goat. And we don't even know what he looks like.
He's a goat.
Setting off, like, wars here. Like, what? You just wake up in the morning and you're like, yeah, I know who she's talking about. Like, let me just help this along a little bit. And then you just sit back and you just watch it. I don't know.
I can see why it should be entertaining in a very sick and twisted way.
It is, you know, it's hilarious. That's why I remembered it, because it's funny. It's funny, but what he's doing isn't right. Like, it's wrong.
It's one of those like, I'm going to laugh at the world burned out.
Yeah.
So, the book that gets you out of a reading slump. The reason why I asked this question is because... you know, as readers, I believe that, you know, you go through dips in life, isn't it? Like, you know, sometimes you're busy, or even if you're a reader, you're just like, oh, I'm tired, I can't read. So which is the book that gets you out of your reading slump, the book you always go back to that reignites a love of reading, especially when you don't feel like reading, or a book that gives you a pep in your step? Did you like that pep in your step?
Okay, so this one was weird for me, because I wasn't sure, like... But eventually I settled on The Dark Angel by Meredith Ann Pierce. So The Dark Angel is a gothic fairy tale. And, you know, a lot of us, I think, as children, you know, we grew up on fairy tales and nursery rhymes and Disney. Just Disney. When I read The Dark Angel, it feels to me like a very simple tale somehow, but it's dark. It's very fairy tale like. It's basically about so there are two at the start. There are two girls. One is very beautiful. The other one is like her maid servant or something, and she's not that attractive. And they've gone off to. Meanwhile, I think the maid servant, like, there was another servant in the house who used to tell her stories of this beasts, you know, who would take beautiful girls and take them away. You'd never see them again. And I think there had been some missing girls in the area. So anyway, they go on this walk and they're picking flowers as you do. Why did they used to do that? Pick flowers.
Why
anyway.
Are you asking me?
Well, I suppose maybe...
That's such a cheeky answer. Why are you asking me? Though?
I think maybe... I suppose they were putting them in vases. But it seems like, you know, beautiful maidens walking in gardens, picking flowers.
I'm thinking of the brides carrying flowers on their wedding day because they stank.
Okay.
So maybe they had to collect flowers to, you know,
fragrance. To keep things, smelling fresh. Yeah. So they were picking flowers, I believe. I may be wrong. They were picking something in there. And this winged creature comes and tries to grab the beautiful one. And I think the maid servant, she sacrifices herself in some way. Aww. Like, so she ends up being grabbed. I don't remember the scene very well. It was an action scene. But, like, she ends up being grabbed and taken away. So he takes her to his tower or wherever he lives, really far off. And when he drops her, he realizes she's not the beautiful one. And he's not too pleased about this. So he decides that, okay, well, he can't marry her. So what he's going to do is, it turns out he had like 13 women that he had already picked up and they had already died. Like, so I think he marries them and kills them or something.
He sucks their life force away from them. Yeah.
So then but their spirits were still there.
So they become like ghouls.
Their spirits were still hanging around. And he told her that she had to look after them. So she becomes a maid to these 13. I don't know. These stories I'm thinking, like, they're sounding really... she becomes a maid.
I'm just going to say, I'm not surprised you wrote My Sister Sarah Kiddo.
Yeah, like, look at what was going on. So she's a maid. And at some point, she has to find a way to clothe these women. And she does it. I can't remember. She sews... Because they're girls, so they couldn't wear normal clothing. Mm. She had to, I think she started sewing air. I don't remember. It was weird. It was where she was sewing some...
Something.
And anyway, to cut the long story short, eventually she's there for quite some time. I think months or something. And, or maybe years. I don't really remember. She was there for some time. But the thing is that as she's growing, she blossoms and she becomes beautiful. So unfortunately, the guy's like, okay, actually, I can marry you now. So I won't spoil the ending or whatever, but it was a story that kind of, I don't know what it is about me, but I feel about it, but I feel like it's one of those books that I'll always kind of like use to remind myself why I want to write. It's not like I thought of it as a super deep story or anything, but I've always been drawn to, again, I guess it's the gothic and the something about a fairy tale, the magic of it. I love that magic, you know, ethereal kind of feel of that that world that Meredith created. I didn't even know it was a trilogy until recently. So I'm gonna have to, it's a bit embarrassing, I'm gonna have to look for the other two books. I definitely loved that one, and the song that I picked for it was Stand Still by Sabrina Claudio. Gothic fairy tale. I wanted something that sounded gothic and did what I wanted it to do. I wasn't sure what I wanted it to do. When I found this song, I was like, okay, I think this is it. So I'm just going to read out the lyrics.
And it sounds like a really gothic song.
Yeah, it has just a gothic
feel. And it's comforting as well. Who would have thought gothic was so comforting?
Do you know what? Like, as I'm looking at this selection, I'm like, clearly I like gothic. I'm going to actually look out for more gothic because clearly I'm into that. And I
You're
didn't
welcome.
Really realize. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I didn't realize I was. But it's a really beautiful story. That story has heart, the Dark Angel. It really does. And okay, so time is being wasted screaming. Not listen, I promise you'll heal me better. You're so unaware about the feeling, the same thing, the same damn thing. Time is standing still. And why are we still here? I don't want to fight you. I'm needing the same as you. Is this thing in English? Because it sounds weird. Like, I'm just... I mean, it's in English. Obviously, I'm reading it in English. But I was just like, not listen, I promise.
Do you know that's a... Those lyrics are from Genius, and it says it's certified by the singer.
Yeah, it's
actual lyrics.
Maybe I was, listening to it, I must have just been like, yeah, I know what she's saying. But it said, not listen, I promise, you'll heal me. But okay, well, we'll go with it. But it's, no, but it was mostly, I think that whole time is being wasted screaming, and time is standing still, and why are we still here? I don't want to fight you. And, there is definitely that in the book where it's like, obviously there's this thing about time because she's there and she transforms in that time, and not just on the outside, she transforms on the inside, and even this creature as well changes. Mm. And a relationship that's quite
antagonistic
at the start also, you know, transforms. So I thought that was a good selection.
There was so I was reading the blurb of the book, and by the way, you're getting me into gothic books now. No, seriously, I was listening.
You're welcome. Right.
Listen, I was reading it. You also didn't mention that he needed a 14th wife to evolve to the next level.
Yeah. That's next level in the game. Yeah. The next level in the video game. Yeah, to become like, he was he was already a creature, but like to become like the, he was going to evolve into
something
like,
worse. Like
a king.
Like
So
when I read about the book, mm-hmm. there was a direct correlation between the book and the Chronicles of Narnia or something along some, a lot mm-hmm. of, you know, was a reviewer that was making that correlation between it. And so they were making like very strong relation between that and the Christian theme.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing about redemption,
mm-hmm.
you know, how, like you said, sacrificial love,
mm-hmm.
where a person puts themselves in the front line mm-hmm. to fight an evil force.
Yeah, I mean, until you said it, I hadn't seen the Christian, like I didn't, clearly I wasn't, they did not tell me to read it in literature, so in literature class, so clearly I wasn't reading it too deeply, but now I see it, there is a lot of, there is, because she sacrifices herself twice actually in that book, and there is that theme of redemption and love, and I don't want to talk about the ending, but the ending, you know, it definitely puts what you're saying into place. Like I said, I didn't see it before, but I can definitely see where they're drawing the connection. And I mean, most likely, maybe they even knew what her influences were. I don't know a lot about Meredith Ann Pierce, so I just read it as a gothic fairy tale, but like I can definitely see, you know, that connection. I like that because I mean, again, those themes were there, like I can't even like, especially the redemption and the sacrificial love, they were definitely there. But that book, for me, I don't know. You know, it's funny because I feel like it's not a book a lot of people might... It may seem over the top for a lot of people, but I don't know. Like, it was an easy read. It's engaging and just the journey of the girl and all of that. I've seen what choices she was going to make, but... It's a small book. It doesn't even but like it's a book, like I said, I would read just to kind of be like, okay, this is what I'm into. This is what I like to remind myself. Because I think sometimes, especially I'm experiencing that now as a writer, when other people's voices get involved and people are giving you criticism and saying you hear what the world wants or what the world expects, you can start to forget what you like and why you even started writing in the first place. And you're trying to meet other people's expectations, and I think The Dark Angel is always going to be a book that kind of draws me back and says, you know what, it's okay to keep it simple and just have fun with it.
That leads us on to the final one, because Keep It Simple reminds me of My Sister the Serial Killer, which is just a simple read. And listen, I can't tell you enough how much of a gift that book was to read. You're looking for your phone, right?
Yeah.
Stand up and look around. It must be on this. There you go.
Yeah,
I can't tell you how much it was a joy to read. I mean, and also the fact that the chapters were literally two pages. It's like 2 pages chapter. And so I told, I don't know, yeah. So my friend and I were talking about the book. And so she was talking about how the very shortness of the chapter added to the urgency of the narrative. So as you're finishing one, it's like, oh, on to the next one. Which, you know, so the book is like, it's not fast paced, but the way it's written gives it this illusion of being fast paced. Yeah. And then when you finish reading the book, it then simmers. And then you start processing. I processed your book for about a week after reading it. You know, it sat in my mind and it settled into me, but in a good way, because I started seeing things quite differently. You know, this whole thing about, you know, beauty and the whole dating, people's motivations for dating. You always sort of explore that and question that and criticize men for being whatever, whatever. But the way it is depicted in the book, it's quite interesting.
Thank you.
And that takes us on to the last question, which is the book you would recommend to people who loved My Sister the Serial Killer and they want to read something that's evocative of that.
Okay, so initially I was going to go with a crime novel, but then I don't really think of My Sister the Serial Killer as a crime novel. So I know a lot of people liked Corridor's voice and her character, and maybe Ayla's character as well. So I thought Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman was a good pick, because when I read it, I fell in love with Eleanor and her quirkiness. She's a super quirky character, and her voice, and the thing, Sarah's laughing because she knows, just thinking about Eleanor's crazy. And I think, like, Eleanor, what I really loved about it was that Eleanor would be in a situation, and she would be completely convinced that everyone else in the room was the problem, and as the reader and as an objective reader, just I don't even know like how to explain it, but as a reader, you're like no, Eleanor, no. Eleanor, you're the problem in this situation. And she had such a self-righteous voice. Yes. Like, she was really self-righteous, which, again, I liken to Corridor, because Corridor can be a bit self-righteous. But Eleanor is really self-righteous.
But
and
also, is a self-righteous, it's not, it's a very unaware self-righteousness. Yeah. Like, she has no sense of
reality.
Self-awareness. She's detached from reality. Even her language.
Yeah. Yeah, she's talking like she's from another...
from Jane Austen.
Yeah, another era. But she carries herself... This thing, she actually judges people, which was why I say she's selfish. She judges people for things that are completely normal. And she's wondering, like, am I the only normal person here? And we're like, no, Eleanor, you're the only abnormal person in this scenario. And you need to wake up to that. So I think if people read that, they wanted something with a... Because Eleanor also has a different voice, I think. So with a different voice, quirky, fun, you'll definitely laugh reading it. So if you want something where the narrator shocks you into laughter, I think it's fair to say Eleanor Oliphant is a fantastic choice. You know, it's weird like seeing an adult character so detached from reality. Weird.
So what is the recurring theme in the book? What connects this book and
why is
my, what
Sarah
connects
taking me to class? Like, why are you taking me to class though? Like, I don't know what I did to you.
Well, you picked it. You said if people liked Eleanor the Oliphant.
Recurring theme.
Eleanor Oliphant is completely
in
fine.
The book, one recurring theme, I think it addresses mental health. That's a recurring theme in it. I think there's a theme of relationship as well. Familial relationship,
loneliness,
a very awkward relationship.
Loneliness is a key
how you
thing.
Can sort of be in the midst of people and still be completely apart. I don't know, you know, it's what's weird for me and books is that, like, I have books I love, but to remember them, like, is a real challenge for me. But yeah, there's definitely that. And, like, I guess one similarity between that book and My Sister the Serial Killer is that there's this parental figure that damages the psyche of the heroine. So they definitely have that in common. And yeah, so the trauma and how trauma can affect like a character or a person rather. Yeah.
There was so Gail Honeyman, the writer of Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine,
mm-hmm.
which the title is a lie, by the
yeah.
way. The title just perfectly sums up the whole book and Eleanor's approach to life. But so she, when she was asked what was her inspiration for writing the book, she said that the novel came from a character. A few years ago, she read a newspaper article about loneliness. It included an interview with a young professional woman living in a big city who said that she would often leave work on Friday afternoon and not speak to another human being until she returned on Monday morning. And so when loneliness is discussed in the media, it is usually in the context of older people. So Gail was struck by this disparity in that. And so, I mean, when I was, and by the way, thank you for making me read.
Yeah.
Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. Which song did you pick with it?
Oh, yes. So I wanted something that was quirky because I don't think, it was difficult to kind of capture what the tone of Eleanor Oliphant was, but I kind of wanted to go with something up tempo and quirky. So I just discovered this artist the other day. I saw her perform live in Lagos at an event, and so I picked her song. She didn't perform this song, but I found the song. It's called Out the Magazine by Lindsay Abude.
In your magazine, the world is bigger than you ever thought it would be.
Talks about it being about loneliness and sort of like, you know, we've talked about how Eleanor Oliphant didn't have this she didn't have a real idea of how, you know, people worked, how life worked, how interaction with people worked. She was very awkward in terms of that. And the video, you guys should look for the video of this song as well, but the lyrics go as follows. Life is a journey, so you will see. It's okay to dream and be what you want to be. Yes, so don't be stuck too long in your magazine. The world is bigger than you ever thought it would be. So I think this is a good song to give to Eleanor herself to guide her through life. But I think she's doing better now.
She is.
Yeah.
And if you could summarize My Sister the Serial Killer in two songs.
Roses.
By
now I'm blanking. Outcast. Roses by Outcast, because they are talking about a babe who basically thinks she's the bee's knees, and she knows she's beautiful, but they talk about how roses really smell. Yeah. Like,
I know you really think your ish don't stink.
Yeah. Roses is like, yeah. So roses don't smell as good as they think, or she thinks they smell. You know, there's actually this thing about roses in the book as well, because yes. Ayla gets roses a lot, and I think the song does her justice. So the second song I would pick, this is tough. Can I pick two?
Do you?
Okay,
by the way, listeners, Oyinka very kindly gave us a playlist.
Yes.
Like a whole playlist for My Sister the Serial Killer, and each chapter has a song to go with it. So me asking her to distill it to just three, I can see why it's difficult. Well, two. So she's going to do three now.
So I'm going to do three. Yeah. Sorry, guys. Okay, so Loyalty by Kendrick Lamar, yes, featuring Rihanna. Yes. Because why not? I mean, it's such a cool song. But yeah, basically, because the whole book is kind of like, you know, about loyalty to some extent. At least Corey Day feels like it is. Then Thank You Next
Yeah.
By Ariana Grande. Mind, like, this is how I think, guys. In my mind, when she says thank you next, she has killed off the, like, she's moving on to the next one. She killed the previous guy and she's like, thank you, and she's moving on. So you know, I definitely, yeah, so those are the three I would pick.
Oh, thank you so much, Anyakam Braithwaite.
I've had a lot of fun.
Thank you. And oh, seriously, guys, people, we're not gendering our listeners. Listen, I don't hype books for the sake of it. I've read this book, and if you're looking for a book to lift you up, to make you laugh, and you're laughing, you're like, why am I laughing? But then you're still laughing because it's funny, you know. That's what this book is about. It's so good. Check it out. And Oyinkan, I'm for Oyinkan. Did I do it again?
Yeah, I mean,
the hard K.
Yeah. You're like, oh, you call. You sound like there's an auntie that's really angry at me. I'm like, where? What did I do? what happened? Oh, you call, come here.
I loved every moment spent recording this episode. Oyinkan Braithwaite is a vibe. Her laughter is infectious and her sincerity is admirable. I highly recommend reading My Sister the Serial Killer. It is a fantastic light read with deep sociocultural underpinnings. Tune in to next week's episode with my very dear friend, Lydia Levy Caquera, whose piece, That Idyllic Home, was recently published in the most recent Writivism anthology titled Unbreakable Bonds. We discuss migrant literature and the art of maintaining a consistent reading habit. An extended playlist of songs featured in each episode are available in the show notes. Subscribe to the mailing list at booksandrhymes.com. The song you have just heard in the intro and outro is titled Dismembered by Mia Coombe. If you enjoy this episode, please do me a favor and subscribe, rate and review Books and Rhymes on iTunes and your favorite podcast listening platforms. Tell your friends about the podcast and continue the conversations by following Books and Rhymes on Twitter and Instagram. Until then, see you next time.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on. Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.